You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
To the October 17th edition of Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink. Laurent has the day off. His dad's in town, so he's showing off the baby, I'm sure. You can friend us on Facebook, download podcasts of the show at lambdaweekly.com. And our guest today is Sam Wilkes from Youth First Texas. Welcome, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you were supposed to be here last week. You had a car accident. You're okay?
Yeah, everything's fine. Just a fender bender, but, you know.
Yeah, but it's one of those
emotions
things.
Emotions run high.
Yep, they do. They do. On Friday, we had a rally down at Lake Cliff Park. Patty, you were one of the organizers of it, sort of.
Yes. Actually, Damian Duckett took lead on our board of directors with the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance and put together a very good rally. And it was really the first time we've held an event like that in Oak Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And we plan to do many, many more.
And who spoke?
We had leading off State Representative Roberto Alonzo, who's been a co-author of legislation in the Texas House for safe schools, anti-bullying measures, along with many others. But he was...
Well, one of the others was Delia Hasso, city council person. She's going to be our guest next week. You know, we've been talking for the last couple of weeks about suicide, about gay teen suicide. Joel Burns, city council person from Fort Worth, did a video. He spoke at the city council meeting, and it was videoed because their city council meetings always are. And the video has gone viral. As of this morning, it has gotten 1,386,000 hits.
That's amazing. He is the news story this week, I think.
Yeah, he is. He is. What was so amazing about this video that he did? Do you want to set it up a little bit? What was it about this that it's gotten a million hits?
Well, I think certainly for people in North Texas, we've known Joel to be a leader on the Fort Worth City Council who stepped up throughout the last year and a half or so of the Rainbow Lounge incident and all of the many, many changes that the city of Fort Worth has made as a political subdivision and, you know, municipality. Mm-hmm. And so we know him, but I think the world has now known him as a city council member of a fairly large city, if they recognize Fort Worth as such,
it's a top 25 city now.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, one of the fastest growing in the nation.
Yeah.
And it's significant. And he took his time at the we would call it the horseshoe in Dallas at the council to speak out about his personal, very moving personal experience growing up as a young gay man and what he endured. And his message was really twofold to adults to step up and do something to stop this bullying because it's got to stop. Mm-hmm. And secondly, to GLBT youth and other at-risk teens. That it gets better, that it really does get better. Don't hang around.
Yeah. Ms. Sam, you are the
Director of Development and Administration at Youth First Texas.
Yeah. You're the everything there.
I characterized you as Executive Director.
I mean, as the only staff member, yeah. I wear many different hats.
Right. So you are basically the face of Youth First Texas right now. Do we have less of a problem with suicide, teen suicide here in Dallas because we have Youth First Texas?
I would love to think so. You know, over 50% of the youth that come to Youth First Texas have attempted, not contemplated suicide. I like to think that the problem is universal and that unfortunately a lot of gay youth feel like that's their only outlet. But I would love to think that Youth First Texas, because of Youth First Texas, the youth who come to us who either fail at suicide or are contemplating suicide know that there are other options out there, and they find that peer support network.
Okay, I find that frightening. I think that's horrible. I think that's disgusting. Half who show up have contemplated suicide?
Attempted, not contemplated. And there's a big step between contemplating and attempting.
So half have even attempted?
Attempted.
Most are not successful.
Thank God.
Most are not even going to end up in the hospital.
Right, right.
But they've attempted in one way or another, just mm-hmm. done something destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because what is
going on?
They see no other way out. I mean, you're talking about, you know, and a lot of people see Dallas and Fort Worth as, you know, fairly liberal and fairly progressive cities, but, you know, and they are. But once you get out into the...
In some ways.
But once you get out to the smaller communities, you have a really... really conservative and very religious-driven mentality. And so these youth have grown up their entire lives thinking their mindset and the way they think and the way they feel is completely wrong. And it's completely unnatural, and everything about them is wrong inherently. And so I can't imagine coming to terms with you as a person and trying to reconcile that, what you've been taught your entire life and the way you feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, it must be a horrible situation.
Now, I know I'm not the usual... I never grew up thinking, knowing, hearing that there was anything wrong with being gay. I never heard anything other than, well, you're part of our family, period. I mean, they're the crazy ones, not me. I'm not the most sympathetic, but I'm not the most, I'm not relating to this.
Right,
just not relating to this.
No, I can totally relate.
As can I.
And you can. And you can too, Sam.
I was raised in a very Southern Baptist environment. And, you know, initially in a small town, and then in a larger but still small town. And then I went overseas, and, you know, I kind of woke up, got to see the world. But I think that's part of the issue, is that being a teen is really difficult all by itself. You can be the most popular and the most successful or whatever, and still be a miserable kid trying to search for your identity. Mm-hmm. Who am I? What am I going to do with my life? What is it? You know, what's my next step? What am I going to do? You know, where does it all start? Where does it end? And it's a very difficult time, as it is. And then you tack on a bunch of other things on top of it, and kids inherently have a very narrow parameter around their world.
Right. And when I say I never had any of that, of course I had all the growing up stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying, but no more than anybody else, as far as anything I could see.
I think what makes it a little bit tougher now is that, you know, back in the 80s, the average age for coming out was late 20s, early 30s. Then in the 90s, we saw early 20s as the time to come out. And now 14 is the average age. Mm-hmm. And so, because, you know, youth are just, or kids, they are just exposed to it so much quicker. You have people, you have gay celebrities, it's constantly in the news with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and, you know, we can't adopt, can't get married.
And gay characters on TV.
So, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because while we have more exposure, we also hear every single day on why we're second-class citizens, why we can't marry, why we can't adopt, why we can't serve our country and be who we are. And so they're constantly saying, oh, yeah, they're gay people, but they can't do everything that straight people can. And so, I mean, you get this really comprehensive view that it's pretty crappy.
Good story that I heard coming in. This happened in North Carolina this week. A lesbian couple was in a mall, and the security guard in the mall went up to them. They were holding hands, and I guess they kissed. And apparently, from all sides, it was an innocent kiss, but the two women kissed. So a security guard comes up to them, told them they'd have to leave the mall because of their inappropriate behavior. The mall apologized. The mall put the security guard on paid administrative leave. And the mall is going to do some sensitivity training for all of their employees. This is North Carolina, Jesse Helms country.
Very true.
But this business, this mall, is saying, what did they do that's inappropriate? They're customers here. They're here spending money.
And if a straight couple had done exactly the same thing,
they
probably wouldn't have even seen it. Like, what are you talking about? What's the problem?
But I think maybe we're at a point where things are changing a little bit, that even in a place like North Carolina, and I don't mean to single them out, it's just that that's where the story took place, that attitudes are changing, that some people see that as inappropriate behavior, but other people are not.
Right.
They're just accepting that, which I think is good.
Now, do you hear a lot of incidents of bullying to the degree that some of the folks around the country who have taken their own lives that we've heard about recently in the news? Have you heard that kind of level of bullying and that persistence?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The kids that you work with?
Yeah, and you know, and God bless the youth of Youth First Texas. They're the most resilient people I've ever met in my entire life. They're a daily source of inspiration for me because what they do, you know, they come to Youth First Texas and they realize, you know, through counselors and staff and board of directors, you know, that they are good people, that they are deserving of time and they have worth. And so they take that and they internalize that, and then they go to school. And you know, there are a couple of youth in particular that I'm thinking of, and, you know, they go, and it's not, you know, they don't do anything out of the norm. They're just expressing themselves, which every youth has, and every person has the God-given right to do. But, you know, the things that they hear, you know, constant fag and you know, and tranny and this, and it's just amazing to me that it's, you know, first off, that kids can't be a little bit more creative, but then secondly, that it's constant and it's daily and it's, you know, once again, it's not only this bullying, but a lot of times it's institutionalized because where are the teachers at this point? Mm-hmm. Where's the school administration standing up and saying, stop?
And, this and is if ridiculous. It was just the words are harmful.
Absolutely.
But very often it's also related to physical attacks.
Absolutely.
On these kids.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're hearing a lot of from the kids who are telling you that they've contemplated suicide or actually attempted, that there were physical attacks? Or is it just the words?
I think it's more a political thing as far as school politics, because a lot of youth know that physical would demand some kind of action from administration, but verbal is just something that they can get away with and say, I didn't, you know. And
there was that, the first case down in the Cy-Fair school district down near Houston, not the one where there was a suicide, but the kid who pleaded with the bus driver, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, please don't let me off here. They're going to beat me up. The bus driver wouldn't do anything. He got off the bus. They did beat him up. And fortunately, somebody, a neighbor, saw what was going on and got out a gun and dispersed the crowd. You're saying it demands action. There wasn't any action.
Right.
There wasn't any action on not just a threat, but this was, they are going to beat me up. Please do not make me get off the bus here. What do you do? How do you train these people to look out for your kids?
Well, it's interesting to me, not all that long ago, a young teen in Ennis committed suicide. And I don't know that he was gay or perceived to be gay, but the level of bullying was to such a degree that he killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that made news everywhere in North Texas. And, you know, if people don't think this is, you know, it's not in my backyard, or it's not affecting me, or it's not affecting my neighbors or my kids, they're wrong. This is really a problem everywhere.
I got some statistics. In 2005, which was the most recent that I could find, 4,212 young people between the ages of 15 and 24 died by suicide. And you say, well, that's 4,000. It's, you know, it's a lot, but, you know, how many hundreds of thousands are, you know, die from cancer? Well, that's one every 2 hours. That's a teen or young 20s suicide, one every 2 hours. And here's the statistic that really backs up what you're saying, Sam, about how many kids actually show up who have contemplated suicide. For every completed suicide by a young person, so for each one of these 4,212, it's estimated that 100 to 200 attempts are made.
Mm-hmm.
1 to 200 attempts. So
that's a tragedy.
40 to 80,000 attempts by young people every year. And we know that how many of those are gay and lesbian kids, or kids perceived to be gay
right.
and lesbian.
I think this running statistics is either varies from one half to a third. So, I mean, you know, and you're talking about youth who are not outwardly gay. I wasn't what I consider an outwardly gay youth. You know, I did whatever I did. And no, I never suffered the physical and verbal abuse that gay youth today did.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew from the age of 12 that I was different. I knew that there were certain things I liked about gym class that other people didn't care for. So, you know, and I think just to put this all in perspective, when we talk about suicide, I mean, it's a tragedy when at whatever age it occurs. But you're talking about 14 to 22-year-olds. I mean, you're talking about people who have yet to experience life at its fullest. I mean, you know, they haven't gone through, I mean, they have nothing but potential ahead of them. Mm-hmm. And for them to be in such a downward spiral, in such a dark, abysmal place where they think suicide is the only viable option, I think that that's, I mean, that if that's not a call to action, then I don't know what is. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's just horrible to think that, you know, this person with who hasn't gone through college, hasn't decided on a career, hasn't even begun to think about a family or anything, can't see past, you know, the past 6 months of such horrendous abuse that suicide is really the only option they can see.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think that comes back to being such a, you know, having such a narrow world. And I think kids that do a lot of traveling and parents who take their kids on a lot of vacations to see the world and get out there and experience different other things, they can keep that vision mm-hmm. outside that bubble they're in at the moment mm-hmm. and realize that, you know, I got to wait this out, maybe, mm-hmm. and get until I can get to that bigger place.
Now, we jumped right into this discussion. We have lots of people who listen. They're on their car radios. They're flipping channels. They stop because, you know, Patty's voice is so alluring, and they just listen to us and have no idea what Youth First Texas is. What is it?
Youth First Texas is the only center in North Texas providing social, educational, and counseling services to GLBTQ youth.
Okay, so but it's a community center where they can go?
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's a counseling center?
We have programs that run Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 9 for our youth, and we do everything from communal dinners to free unlimited counseling. We do social services, HIV, AIDS, STD education and testing, GED scholarship training, college readiness programs, leadership core, runs the gamut. Whatever our youth need, is we'll develop a program for, mm-hmm. because we're blessed with a wealth of volunteers and board members who bring lots of different skills to the table and lots of different abilities. And
it's one of the most over-chaperoned groups that you can imagine.
Now, is this something that, you know, kids can just go hang out?
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, like instead of, you know, hanging around in their own neighborhood, they could come join other kids.
Yeah, and that's one thing we encourage, because you know, they come to socialize with youth, you know, from Lake Louisville, Fort Worth, Arlington, Addison. They come to socialize with youth who are going through the same things, but at the same time, they're developing that peer support network. So the next time they're in that abysmal space, they have somebody to Facebook, they have somebody to text, they have somebody to call. That person hopefully will say, call a counselor at YFT, because they're there for you, and they're ready to talk to you.
Okay, so for any youth that are listening, or any parents, or any friends, or any teachers that are listening, you're located on Harry Hines Boulevard mm-hmm. in a beautiful, renovated, brand newly renovated building. What's the exact address?
3918 Harry Hines.
And once the Green Line opens, you're directly across the street from the Market Center. Not Market Center. Yes.
Yeah, Market Center.
The Market Center stop.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that'll be fabulous. You'll be right in front of a DART rail stop.
Yes. And we're on the TRE rail stop. We're on the DART line. Our youth are mavens of mass transit, so mm-hmm. they can tell you how to get anywhere. And so thankfully that... we're just right at the cusp of a lot of different lines.
Right.
There's an app for that.
Oh, is there really?
It'll be the first stop right after Victory Station.
Right.
Which will be wonderful for you. It won't be wonderful for you. Where are you getting the extra money for all the extra kids that are going to show up?
yeah, that's one thing that we've been truly fortunate. We have an amazing amount of support within the community. The Dallas Bears, we are the main beneficiary of the Allen Ross Freedom Pride Parade. We're a Black Tie Dinner beneficiary. It's just amazing to me to see the amount of groups and of social organizations have come together and said, you know, this is the next generation of leaders for the GLBTQ community. Like, these are the next people who are going to push for equality and make sure that we're able to get married and serve in the military and adopt and do everything that everybody else can do.
I don't want to serve in the military. that's my own issue, though. We need to take a break before we do. How many other cities around the country have anything like Youth First Texas?
Last February at Creating Change, we were fortunate enough to meet with some organizations in different cities, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New York, and I believe Miami, just to name a few. But they came to our center and were completely blown away. They said that there's nothing like Youth First Texas in any of those cities. They do not serve the number of youth that we serve, and that the consistency with which we offer programs is something they've never seen before.
We're talking to Sam Wilkes. He's the executive director, fundraising director, development director, assistant director,
staff.
Associate
Jack
director,
Angel.
And staff of Youth First Texas. We'll be back with more right after this.
The KNON Morning Line is your chance to be informed of national issues and take part in local events. Listen and call in Monday through Thursday starting at 7 a.m. You can find an open forum for your voice to be heard on the Voice of the People. KNON 89.3 FM.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the Voice of the People.
Listening to our theme song from the Donna Reed Show.
Oh, it makes me so sad.
Billingsley passed away yesterday.
Oh,
she was 94, though.
94.
She was 94, yeah. Yeah.
And I have to say, do you hear about the 82-year-old woman who was pulled over for doing 110? Eric said, rock on, old lady.
She'd probably just fall asleep at the wheel and her foot had just gone...
No, she said she was on her way to an appointment, didn't realize how fast she was driving.
Good for her.
Patty, Day of Truth.
Day of Truth. This is a really an amazing story, I think, and something we were going to talk about last week, but this week it's even better. If you're not familiar with Day of Silence is what, Sam?
Day of Silence is a day for all for youth to stand up in their schools, and they actually do not speak, and it's to represent all the youth who are bullied but never are able to speak out for themselves. So it's a great collective effort within communities for youth to stand up and say, we represent the youth who are bullied every day because of their sexual identity, gender orientation, or whatever else, and we're not going to speak and represent them today.
And it's not just GLBT kids that participate. It's a lot of straight kids and such, and thousands of schools participate every April in doing that. And the right-wing groups, primarily led by Exodus International, but lots of right-wing groups had supported what they created as Day of Truth, which was basically to oppose Day of Silence, and that's when you should go around and say the truth, quote unquote, about homosexuality, you know, and say that you're going to be going to hell. It's against God's law. Blah blah blah. So they've been doing this for years and years, and now they get it. They have stopped it. They've done away with Day of Truth because they feel like it's contributing to the bullying. Mm. And hello.
Yeah, there's a shocker. But, you know, once again, it goes back to that institutionalized bullying. You know, for the longest time, these youth were encouraged to stand up and say, well, that doesn't happen, and it's wrong. And so, I mean, it's just an institutionalized, condoned form of bullying. Oh, I can stand up and say that because it's my right as a religious fanatic to stand up and say that you're going to hell. Really?
Do you know, on the Dallas Voice website reporting on some of this, one of the comments that I thought was interesting, because people were saying, you know, bullying needs to stop and this kind of harassment and this language needs to stop in schools. So somebody came on and just said, freedom of speech. Why is this not a freedom of speech issue?
This is not a freedom of speech issue because you're creating a dangerous space for a youth. I mean, the right to education and the right to pursue your education, and you should be able to do that in a safe and secure spot. I mean, this is not freedom of speech. Hate speech is never a right.
You know, at the rally, I chose my moment to speak and talk about if this were happening to adults in the workplace, there would be serious cause for action.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be considered harassment and creation of a hostile workplace environment. And that's no different than with our kids. Even if it's in a kind of a recess or between classes, that's still creating a hostile environment for them.
So in most workplaces, you have freedom of speech. Say what you want. You want to be a bigot? You want to say these hateful things to this other person? Well, you're not working here. And it should be the same thing for kids. You want to be a bigot? You want to say all these things? You want to try to hurt him through what you're saying? That's fine, but you're not going to school here.
If this were any other minority group, this would not even be a discussion. This would be a non-issue. You know, if this were, you know, any other minority or women in general, we couldn't shut this down fast enough. Because it's homosexual youth and it's gender identity youth, or, you know, it's up to interpretation and that's my religious right. No, it's not.
And what even worse is, well, they should expect it. You know, I mean, that's what I really chaps me is that, you know, they say, well, you know, these kids need to be quiet about who they are. Otherwise, you know what's going to happen to them.
Like, in Joel's video.
It's the same concept in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell thing. It's there to protect gay people. All right.
Well, in Joel's video, first kid he showed was Asher from Houston, who committed suicide, who did identify as gay. The second one he showed was a kid who was picked on for being perceived as being gay, never came out. He was 12 years old. You know, he never came out, or probably never even thought of himself one way or the other. He just thought of himself maybe, I guess, as different. So how many kids do you serve over at Youth First Texas?
We're on slate this year to serve an estimated 1,350 youth.
Wow.
And of those, how many of them are really just, you don't think, they're not gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, they just don't fit in anywhere else, and so they come to you?
Yeah, that's interesting that you ask, because there are, I'd say, probably about 10% who come and, you know, they're just exploring their youth, they're questioning. And so they're like, well, what is this whole gay, what is transgender, what is, you know, am I bisexual? Who knows? But we have one who serves on our youth board, who, in particular, that I'm thinking of. And she came, and she was kind of questioning, and then she decided it just wasn't for her. Mm-hmm. She came into my office and said, you know, this whole gay thing is just not for me. And I said, well, that's outstanding. You know, we're glad to have you, regardless of who you are.
And she's still on the youth board.
She's still on the youth board, and she's still, I mean, she's amazing. She's a total rock star. But she just comes, and, I mean, but how awesome is that, that she came to Youth First Texas, she had her eyes open, she was able to make an informed decision, and she still realizes that people have value no matter what their sexual orientation or gender identity is.
And she's a great voice. There are a lot of kids out there who are very supportive of their peers who now have an outlet.
Right.
They can say that.
And she'll go on and get married and have kids and raise the most amazing, open-minded, dynamic children on the planet.
Well, why did she come in the first place? Was she a kid who didn't fit in?
She was. She was a youth. She went to a predominantly white school, and she is Hispanic, and so she just didn't feel like, you know, she never was able to cross that line, and she just was. She was just a kind of a in a tumultuous place, and she just wasn't sure. You know, I didn't have any real direction. Mm-hmm. But she came there, and she, you know, it's amazing to me how much school and social life are interconnected. You know, a youth who doesn't feel like they fit in, That's their primary focus. They're not going to worry about school. They're not going to worry about education. They're going to worry about, am I liked? Where do I fit in? How do I label myself? How do I, you know, according to society, how do I pigeonhole myself? Mm-hmm. And so if that's their primary focus, then education takes a second or third seat most of the time.
Yeah.
And so it's all about readjusting that focus and saying, you belong here. Now that that's okay, let's focus on what's really important, what's going to serve you in the future.
Mm-hmm. You said probably half of the kids who show up at Youth First Texas for the first time show up after they've already at least thought about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Some have attempted, some have, you know, done some dangerous things, kind of borderline, but half have at least considered it. Once they start attending Youth First Texas and meet other kids who are similar to them and meet other kids who are just happy and they're in a place where they're not being bullied like they are in their own school, how often do you hear about suicide attempts after they start attending?
It's amazing. Thursday night is our most popular night by far. It's where we do big group. And I like to think of big group as kind of a bait and switch, because we invite them in to socialize with another 70 or 80 youth that come. But then while they're there, we're teaching them about boundaries and communication and HIV/AIDS testing and teaching them all about the things that we feel like they should know. We have a small group that meets on Thursday nights as well called Survivors. And that's usually about 10 to 15 youth that's overseen by a counselor. And they come in and they talk about whatever they survived that week. And a lot of times it's suicide attempts or contemplating suicide or bullying or the desire to do drugs and alcohol, just any means to escape. And so we see about, like I said, 10 to 15, sometimes it's upwards of 30 youth who come together, and it's in that small group for about 2 hours where they just talk, and it's a very cathartic process, but once again, it's developing that peer support so they know that it's okay. If you're in this space, we can get you the help that you need to let you know that there are so many other options out there.
But these are kids who are getting the help, will probably not even attempt again.
Absolutely.
They're just still being bullied in school, and now they're at their safe space and they can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really not seeing much in the way of talk about suicide once they're there.
Once they're there, and what, and, you know, the longer that they're there, the greater efficacy our programs have, because they know that they, and they start to believe it. The first couple of times they'll think, oh yeah, you know, this is what it is, and this is what they say. But once they see it in action, and once they develop those peer support networks, and you know, they know that they have friends, you know, two schools over, or maybe in that same school that they can rely on and that they can turn to, or they develop that relationship with either staff or a counselor, and they know that they can call that person at midnight, and that person will answer the phone and say, what do you need? I'm here for you, or, you know, any time during the day. That's when we really start to see a serious decline in their thoughts and their attitudes about suicide.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's really being there. Mm-hmm. Is the big part of it.
It's maintaining a constant vigil, and that's, you know, and that's what we do. My cell phone and contact information is on every business card, as well as that of our counselors on staff and volunteers and board members. It's all easily accessible. So those youth know that at any time, no matter when, they can reach out to somebody and somebody will answer the call.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many of your youth have experienced, or maybe ongoing, in an ongoing way, experienced being kicked out of their homes or really hostile family, home environment?
We've seen, since I've started, I would say probably about 15-20% of the youth that we have that live out on their own have left because they no longer felt safe in their home or they were kicked out.
So of the 1,300 kids, you're saying up to 15% have been kicked out of their homes?
We see a lot of informal ostracization with families saying, well, if that's what you choose, then that's fine. And then that youth is effectively cut out of their family.
That's somewhere like 200 kids that you're seeing. What about the ones that you don't see?
Exactly. There, an estimated 40-50% of homeless youth out there are LGBTQ youth, simply because they think they realize that living on the street was a safer environment for them than their own home, which is tragic.
What kinds of things are these kids telling you went on in their homes?
Well, we see a lot of, you know, a physical abuse. A lot of times, it's just the straight get out. You're no longer part of this family because of the lifestyle that you quote unquote chose. And that's where you see a lot of survival sex. You see a lot of drug and alcohol abuse. You see a lot of, because that's the only way these youth know how to survive.
Or how do they have any legal recourse? Now, obviously, a 16-year-old kid who's thrown out on the street, the first thing that not saying is, oh, I need to get a lawyer, but I mean, you're in a position to hook people up, and
right, absolutely.
Do they have legal recourse against their parents?
They, unless they've been emancipated, they are, you know, their legal guardians are responsible for them up to the age of 17. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, you know, that's not the youth's primary focus, and even if it were, they wouldn't want to. Why would you want to go back to a home that you
weren't? Oh, I'm not saying going back to home. I'm saying suing those parents for malpractice.
Absolutely.
I'm saying, you don't want me in your home? Fine. Rent me an apartment. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying those parents are responsible for their kids. I don't care if they're gay. I don't care if they've decided to practice a different religion. I don't care if they're transgender. I don't care what they are. Those parents are responsible for those kids until they're 17 or emancipated.
Right.
But a parent can't just emancipate his kids. The kid has to apply for the emancipation.
Right. Yeah, and it's been our primary focus just to get them into a safe space and get them set up and make sure that whatever community resources they utilize, be it TRAC, be it Promise House, be it City Place, that they continue to come to Youth First Texas, because a lot of times, you know, while they're there, and the aforementioned organizations are amazing, but we want to make sure that they're staying there and getting that, you know, becoming okay and going through that journey of coming out, because it truly is a process.
Okay, you're talking about 200 kids possibly this year that have come through Youth First Texas. Promise House is in Oak Cliff. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful organization. I've volunteered there before. I love these people. I love what they do for kids, but they also take care of other types of kids too.
Right.
It's maybe 10 bedrooms. I think two kids to a bedroom, something like that. It's 20 kids that they can, maybe it's 30 that they, and maybe they bought the house next door, actually, I think, since I used to go over there. So we're talking 50 kids, we're talking 200 kids of yours. Mm-hmm. who need a place to live.
And a lot of times we see these youth, and they come to us after they've gotten an apartment, after they've done whatever they need to secure their own living facility, because that's obviously their first, you know, the basic essentials. And then they come to Youth First Texas, and then we hear stories of, well, yeah, I was, you know, sofa surfing for a while, sleeping on friends' you know, different friends once a couple of nights here, a couple of nights there, a couple of nights there. But now I moved into my own place. And so that's where those programs like Life Corps are so important that Youth First Texas offers, because then we're teaching them budgeting, we're teaching them the importance of credit, we're giving them all those life skills that their parents didn't, because their parents, you know, that they never had the chance, that their development was arrested because of their parents' ignorance.
So a lot of these kids are actually just moving in with friends temporarily. Does that allow them to continue going to school? I mean, we're talking about, you're on the streets, how do you finish school?
Well, you know, and there and again, that's where our GED program is so important, because you know, what school takes a back seat to where am I going to live, how am I going to eat, how am I going to support myself.
Mm-hmm. How do they eat? I know, okay, so if they're staying at Promise House is a good, safe place for them to live. They can go to school, and they have very strict regimen, discipline.
Right.
It is a wonderful place for kids who've probably had no structure in their lives ever. Where do these kids eat?
We have the advent of our food pantry has been a really, because you know, a lot of times these youth are living hand to mouth, and so whatever they make, they spend, and on rent and utilities and things of that nature. So we run an on-site food pantry where youth come in and just kind of we send them home with canned goods, anything ready to eat, anything that they can just kind of heat and eat and all that kind of stuff.
And you're talking 16-year-olds on average that have been thrown out of their house, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of jobs do they get? You're saying, you know, whatever money they make. What kind of jobs do 16-year-olds get, especially in this economy?
Right. Well, I mean, definitely minimum wage jobs. We're seeing stock people, fast food work, whatever they can do. A lot of retail, entry level, that kind of thing.
You know, and I understand, obviously, they're not getting their own big, luxurious apartment that five of them will get together and rent an apartment so that each one the rent is, you know, under $100 each. But you still have food, you still have... I'm not understanding how they're surviving.
I mean, truly, it's wherever they can get in. And so, I mean, you know, we see a lot. We do communal dinners on Fridays, and so we'll see 20, 30 kids show up there. And this is truly, like, we are a lifeline for a lot of these youth. Our food pantry is really, like, whatever we have is whatever they take, and that's whatever they subsist on until the next time they can get to Youth First Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That's why public transit is such a huge thing for us. You know, car ownership is not a reality for a lot of our youth. And so... public transit is really the only way they can get around. And especially, you know, if you find a job in Arlington and that's the only job that you found, then that's with the job that you take. And so, you know, if it's not on a bus route, then it's not going to happen.
And Arlington wouldn't be. I mean, what are those kids doing?
Well, it just really shocks me that parents would kick their kids out. I mean, it really, really does. That you would disown your child. You know, work through it, and most times it's the parent having to work through their own feelings, and how they were raised and all of that. And it reminds me of years ago when I interviewed Matthew St. Patrick, the actor from 6 Feet Under, African American. He played the African American cop who was gay, and he said that he had been on a soap opera in New York, and he got this job with 6 Feet Under. And it was like going to take off. It's a premium cable show on HBO. And he called his parents, who were living in the South, and were telling them about this new job. And his dad misunderstood him and said, you're dead to me. You're no longer my son. I'm not going to have a homosexual in the family. And he says, Dad, wait a minute. I didn't say I'm gay. I said my character is gay. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, never mind. And he said, well, I can't put that toothpaste back in the tube.
Right.
Now I know that my father would reject me wholeheartedly. I'd be dead to him if I were just gay. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids experience, who knows what they say to the kids.
Yeah, you know, mine was a letter that I got from my parents.
Parents wrote you a letter?
Mm-hmm. It was because, not to take the focus off Youth First Texas, but I think one of the reasons that I love that job so much is because I can empathize with these youth. And,
sure.
You know, my whole coming out story was, I'll never forget, it was a Sunday. I was living in Shreveport, Louisiana with my parents. And I was on the computer. My mom came and asked me if I was gay. And I knew, you know, having grown up in that Southern Baptist mentality, what that, you know, the strings attached to that question were. So I said, I didn't know, which I thought was a safe answer. You know, like I'm questioning. So I left and I was waiting tables at Copeland's of New Orleans at the time. And I left, came home, and at 9 o'clock that night, and there was a letter taped to my door saying that the lifestyle I had chosen was not in keeping with our family values and that I should be out by Monday morning.
Oh, well, really?
And so,
what did you do?
I put all of my clothes into my car and went and sofa surfed for about a month or two.
And how old were you?
I was 18.
Wow.
Were you ever able to recover from this, go to college, continue?
Yeah. Waited tables for years, paid my way through college, and then got started in the nonprofit industry. Hmm. And so it's just been kind of, but that's, you know, that's the way it goes.
What's your relationship like now with your parents?
Non-existent.
Non-existent.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Sam Wilkes. He is the everything at Youth First Texas. He is the paid employee at Youth First Texas. Youth First Texas has hundreds of volunteers that were parents of kids. You know, we're talking about some of these parents, like parents are non-existent. Oh, there are hundreds of parents who volunteer at Youth First Texas and community members and lots of. Sam is the paid staff person. We'll be back. We're going to be talking more about Youth First Texas, suicide prevention, that kind of stuff, right after this.
Less than 30 days away. The Texas Organizing Project, Mi Familia Vota, MULAC Council 4943, the Urban League of Greater Dallas Young Professionals, and candidates for governor, Democrat Bill White and Green Party candidate Deb Shafto, among others, will be having a nonpartisan candidates forum on Saturday, October 16th at 10 a.m. in Irving at Georgia Farrow Rec Center, located at 530 Davis Drive. For more information or seat reservations, the number is 214-455-9115. That's 214-455-9115. KNON presents Blues and Barbecue in downtown Dallas at Pearl on Sunday, October 24th with the Wanda King Blues Band. Wanda King is Dallas Blues royalty. She'll be appearing with their band featuring Joey Love. Wanda King is filming the show, so come on and be part of the video. Joining us will be very special guests, the Barton Street Blues Band, playing classic blues and great original songs. It's an early show with doors opening at 5 p.m. and music going on until 9. Free barbecue will be served from the Alligator Cafe with Cajun brisket plates. Advance tickets are only $8 and available now at KNON.org, Forever Young Records, and at Pearl. It's a KNON Blues and Barbecue Benefit event at Pearl, 2038 Commerce in Dallas. The Wanda King Blues Band, the Barton Street Blues Band, and free barbecue Sunday, October 24th at Pearl.
Friday, November 5th, it's a night with the greatest Russian rock and roll extravaganza to come through Dallas since the last time they came through Dallas. Igor and Red Elvises, your favorite band. Don't miss this or you'll forever be trying to make up for lost fun. Igor and Red Elvises at the Sons of Herman Hall in Dallas, Friday, November 5th. The doors open at 8 p.m. for all ages. Opening the show will be Tweed EQ. It's Weird Warren from KNON's own Sonic Burrito Show, and I'll be your master of ceremonies. Save money by getting your tickets now at KNON.org or Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie. The Sons of Herman Hall, located at 3414 Elm Street at the corner of Elm and Exposition in Dallas. Igor and Red Elvises and Tweed EQ, Friday, November 5th at the Sons of Herman Hall. This is a KNON benefit event. Get your tickets now.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for Darn Heterosexuals.
At an Orlando forum in May for county school board candidates, John Mark Coney took the floor. After reading passages from the Bible, he emphasized his suitability for office by announcing that at age 53, he is a virgin.
Since we're talking about bullying today, in Pompano Beach, Florida, two heterosexual high school teachers were removed from teaching duties after they sprinkled holy water on another teacher who is an atheist. They were charged under the school's anti-bullying policy for aggressiveness towards another teacher.
And this is this week's good parenting story. Police arrested Christina Muniz, 29, from Surprise, Arizona, in June, after being summoned to her home by her 11-year-old son. She had just informed the boy and his 6-year-old brother that she was abandoning them to move to California with her boyfriend to fulfill her dream of becoming a stripper.
Oh, my.
And that's this week's
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
We're talking to Sam Wilkes, and Sam is the director of Youth First Texas. Sam, we know that this week Joel Burns over in Fort Worth, city council person, did this incredible speech at City Hall. It has gone viral. He's been on CNN and The Early Show, and he's just been all over the place. So he's the rock star right now. But it's just a 10-minute video. I'm sure it's making a lot of gay kids listen and think, okay, I think it's making a lot of adults listen and say, ooh, maybe bullying, you know, I think he got through to a lot of adults. If you are someone who you're in school and you suspect that a friend of yours is considering suicide, mm-hmm. if you have a family member who you think might be, first of all, what are the signs?
You know, and there's no, especially with youth, I know that a lot of these can be, you know, a bad day, or but you'll see a lot of mood swings. You'll see a lot of conversations with an air of finality to it, like, you know, you'll see a lot of expressions of love and a lot of, you know, remorse for past mistakes. And, you know, you'll have a very final sense in all their conversations. I've always loved you. I'm so sorry for everything I've done. That kind of thing where they, you know, just kind of out of the blue, unmitigated questions or conversations that, you know, are apologizing or trying to make amends for past mistakes, drastic decline in grades or activities, a complete withdrawal from social circles and friends and things of that nature.
So you're a teacher and you see one of your students doing this. You work in a school, you see one of the kids doing this. You're a kid in school and one of your friends is acting this way. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
There are a lot of great resources out there. The Trevor Project runs the only national hotline for GLBTQ suicides and suicide prevention. Contact Crisis here in Dallas and Teen Contact are great resources as well. Youth First Texas, we have counselors, once again, on staff at all times.
Okay, but those are the resources. What should this person, what should this teacher do, this friend do? Should they contact Trevor Project?
Absolutely.
And or contact you? Now, maybe the kid is not gay or questioning or anything. He's just, but we still want to prevent.
Yeah, suicide prevention is suicide prevention, and it all comes from the same kind of nut of depression in that dark, dark, abysmal place. And so, that you know, it can be anything from family dynamic and that changing to, you know, sexual identity or gender orientation. It all stems from the same place. It's all that the youth can't see past whatever situation they're in at that point, and they don't have the coping mechanisms that they need. So suicide prevention is kind of a blanket thing.
So you're saying, should they confront this person?
Absolutely, no. No, they shouldn't confront them, but just be supportive and then contact these resources and let them kind of guide you in what to do. And depending on what stage that person is in, you can, you know, kind of guide them towards whatever numbers or, you know, whatever, that address whatever issues they're going through. And so that way they have somebody to turn to and they can talk to a licensed counselor about it. But no, you should never confront them and kind of drive them and don't do this. This is stupid, because all you're doing is pushing them closer and closer towards their goal.
And I didn't even mean confronting them that way. I meant even spend more time with that
person. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, be a support and be a resource for them. Absolutely.
And be a friend. Okay.
I wonder, I may know this, how many parents, as they're, you know, as they think they know their kids, if they're just a way that they could put their toe in the water on some of these issues.
Absolutely.
Even if they think they have the best communication going.
Mm-hmm.
Because do a lot of kids really try to hide, even if they have even supportive parents, try to hide how miserable they are?
I think, yeah. Yeah, and especially in terms of coming out, a lot of people assume that, oh, well, because, you know, there's so much public attention towards homosexuality and gay people in the media, then it's totally fine for me to go ahead and out my child or to talk candidly. And coming out is a process. You know, at 16 and 17, I wasn't ready to come out until I was ready to come out. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't comfortable with me being gay until I went through that process. And so I think that it's really important for people to understand that until whoever is going through that is okay with it, it's an off-limit subject. It's an off-limit conversation.
If you're a parent and you're seeing some changes in behavior from your teen that's more than just teens being obnoxious, how should the parent discuss with the child? Should he confront, I'm not saying bring up the gay or the anything, do you see bullying in school? Do you see Are you bullied? Are you doing bullying?
Absolutely.
Every parent should have that discussion with their
Absolutely.
Kids.
Absolutely. And I think that candid conversation is important. In that, and I think that, you know, we can't have a problem with youth and not address it without addressing the parent's responsibility and saying, this is your time to step forward and say, tell me about your day at school. Tell me about what's going on. What problems are you facing and how can I help you? Because that's what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. And it's about being that constant source of support that will ultimately and hopefully end this mm-hmm. tragedy.
You know, one of the things I think is so awful that so many kids are exposed to are these parents who are out of control at sports events mm-hmm. and events where their kids are in, where they're screaming at their own kid and screaming at the other kids and calling them all kinds of names in a moment of passion, I'm sure, but mm-hmm. even beyond that, and before, during, and after a game, where they're making this kid feel like crap and screaming it in front of all other parents, and parents let them. And we know that, you know, cases, for example, where a dad got killed at a hockey game in Massachusetts several years ago, you know, over a son's hockey game. Because the parents were that, on par with bullies. You know, screaming and yelling and name-calling and demeaning and all of that. And so how do we reach those parents? You can't do it legislatively. You can't say, you know, you're the problem.
Well, how often when we do those darn heterosexuals do we run into these parents that are, you know, why are they parents?
Yeah, yeah. And if you get to the root cause of bullying, they don't learn that. I mean, like, it's not an intrinsic thing. They learn that from somewhere. They learn to single out someone who's different and to, you know, and to goad them and to pick on them. I mean, like, that's, you know, it's a learned behavior. It's something they've seen before. So mm-hmm. you can only imagine what their home life is like.
Yeah. We have some elections coming up, and elections do make a difference because we have anti-bullying legislation that's going to be proposed. I polled our local legislators. I made calls to 20 legislators to their Dallas office, Austin office, and campaign offices, and where I could or when they had them, an opponent. I heard back from three. And that includes people who voted for an anti-bullying bill. I think that's how sensitive this issue is. Even the ones who voted for it don't want to go on record in the newspaper that they're for it.
Oh, I don't think that's true. I think you caught them. I don't think they're returning your call. You have to say you're somebody else.
I'm beginning to think that that's very true. One of them who was the strongest is a new state representative, Eric Johnson. Completely emphatic about it. One that surprised me was Linda Harper Brown, who's a Republican in Irving, and she said, well, we don't believe in any bullying in school. All bullying needs to stop.
But you see, that's the problem. There are quite a few of them that will say that, and they want a bill that has no specifics
yes.
whatsoever,
right.
that is so generic and vague that it doesn't empower teachers and faculty and students to do anything about it. That's the problem. And
right.
there are lots of them out there. Dan Branch has said that he would, I'm against bullying. They'll all say that.
Yeah.
But when it comes time to
they
act,
wouldn't say it to
on
me.
A bill that does something about it, they will vote no.
They wouldn't say it to me. Because they didn't want to go on record with the gay media. I mean, that's what it came right down to. We have elections coming up. The legislature's up for re-election. Governor, it was interesting this morning, Dallas Morning News endorsed White.
Bill White.
Which I was surprised about. What's interesting, though, is our governor, Perry, compared to some of the other Republicans running around the country, he's the liberal, he's the statesman, he's the sane one. New York has a Republican running for governor. This nutcase, Palladino, who first of all, New York has a very archaic way to get on the ballot for a primary. You have to be nominated by your party to get on the ballot for the primary. Palladino was not even nominated by the Republican Party, so he got enough signatures, got his name on the ballot, and won by 30 points. What happened this week?
What a roller coaster. He goes to this event with some very orthodox Jewish rabbis, And they hand him a piece of paper that says, these are, you know, these are the words you're to read. And he skipped some of the words, but he read it. And it was very demeaning of gay people, saying we're unnatural and, you know, it's a lifestyle that is, you know, shouldn't be. And he went on and on. And he read this whole thing. And then, of course, he gets, you know, people go, I can't believe he just said that. And, of course, he opposes Andrew Cuomo, who's the current attorney general and the Democratic nominee for New York governor, who marched in Pride Parade in New York City with his kids. So, you know, there's this whole dynamic going on. So the media and the gay community says, what? He just said this? And so he doubles down. He goes down. He goes on the news shows the next morning and says, that's what I said, but you misunderstood what I said. And I really love gay people. In fact, I have a gay nephew. And the gay nephew says, oh, I can't stand
it. Well, the gay nephew was working on his campaign and quit.
Right, and quit. And so now he's in a bigger hot water, right? So then he goes and he apologizes. And now the rabbis that he spoke with, they're up in arms. And one of them says, I'm withdrawing my support because you've gone back on your word. You should be out there hating gay people. Uh-huh. And you're not. And you said you were. And the old Carl would do that.
Now, the other thing about the old Carl, he was accusing Cuomo of being unfaithful to his wife. Meanwhile, while he's doing that accusing, it comes out that he has a daughter from somebody he wasn't married to at the time.
Right.
So he's the one accusing Cuomo of being unfaithful to his wife.
Well, he has a child out of wedlock.
He has a child out of wedlock.
Now, not only this, but in the middle of all of this, Ann Coulter, you know, big friend of the gay community, goes on O'Reilly on Fox News to support Paladino.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, well, you know, I think someone on this network should defend him, she said, that he's a great warrior who wants to lower taxes. And she also said, you know, it's like being in Chicago, you say, go Cubs. Well, really? And that, you know, that all politicians do this. Anyway, O'Reilly ends up saying, I think everybody but you in the world agrees this ain't going to help the guy.
I just hope that Rush Limbaugh is holding the nail while Ann hammers the last one in Paladino's coffin. Like, yeah, that's the only way.
He never did have much of a chance to win. So he's been amusing to watch. Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We are going to get rid of it, aren't going to get rid of it.
Oh, well, it's in the ball's in the air.
Because the Log Cabin Republicans filed a lawsuit against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They won. Now the Obama administration is going to appeal it or no?
I believe they are.
Mm-hmm.
But also the Pentagon says that they're going to abide by the injunction and not kick anybody out.
For now.
But they also warn anyone who is gay, who's currently serving in the military, not to come out. Again, because the ball's in the air. You know, if they were to choose to come out and this ball lands in one court or the other,
mm-hmm.
I think it probably is advisable for them. They've gotten this far, you know, because things can change on a daily basis at this mm-hmm. point. So it's very interesting. But I do think it's significant that a federal judge has told the military this law is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
Don't enforce it.
Right. And it's interesting that it was the Log Cabin suit that worked. So they did a good job on that one.
Yeah.
Sam, thank you. Sam, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for
Youth First
me.
Texas, you actually have two locations. There's one here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. It's on Harry Hines Boulevard across from the new Market Center station on the Green Line. What's the actual address?
3918 Harry Hines.
And that's what's the cross street there?
Wyclef and Harry Hines, just two blocks down.
There's also a location up in Collin County.
Correct.
And where is that?
Actually, we are looking for a new space for them right now. We have Sunday and Wednesday meetings, and we'll be housed sometimes at the Big Brothers Big Sisters office, sometimes at a synagogue that's very sympathetic to our cause.
So it's not this Orthodox synagogue.
No.
If somebody just wants information, who do they call?
You can call me, Sam Wilkes, at 214-522-0300, or visit www.youthfirsttexas.org.
And that's probably the easiest thing for most people to do, is just go to the website, youthfirsttexas.org, and lots of information, lots of resources there, too. Sam, thank you for being with us. Come back, talk to us again.
Anytime.
Next week, our guest is Councilwoman Delia Hasso.
You're